You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, a Kyrie when he make a trade, and nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game is very important, Millie's.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics Podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for making us part of your daily routine. Today, that daily routine includes celebrating a 113-107 win over the Milwaukee Bucks Game 1 of the first round of the NBA playoffs. I am John Corrales from RedsArmy.com, Boston.com, and wherever else I decide to put my stuff. Jam Packard with me today. Jam Packard, formerly WEEI, now changing the world, one criminal justice system at a time. And we are going to talk. There's a lot to get to here. So we had a crazy finish at the end, the overtime, foul calls. What's a foul? What's not a foul? What's a travel? You know, whatever. We had that horrible second quarter where the Celtics basically outplayed the Bucks for most of this game. Except for that second quarter, which was a lot. We'll talk about that. And then we got monster performances from a few people here. So let's just dive into that, Sam. First guy I want to recognize is Al Horford, because I think Al Horford
was the best player on the court.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The Celtics got the ball to him in the post like right away on the first possession of the game. And he scored, and I was like, yes, that's what you got to do. You got to get more Al Horford in the post to have this thing work. And I don't think they did it enough, but literally almost every time that they got it to him in that situation, it worked. He bullied Giannis Antetokounmpo.
I didn't think that was a thing. I didn't think if you just asked me, like, oh, yeah, could Al Horford post up Giannis? I'd be like, no, he's the Greek freak. But Al Horford just dominated Giannis on possession after possession in the post. It was shocking. I was amazed. I was all for it. And the Horford went to the line a bunch, got Giannis some fouls. Giannis ends up fouling out in overtime. It probably wouldn't happen in regulation. But still, I was amazed by Al Horford's offensive performance tonight. And I think you combine that with he just played stellar defense on Giannis the entire night. And Brad mentioned that in his post game, is just about like how well he played on Giannis. And Giannis is going to put up numbers, especially when he plays 45 minutes in tonight's game. He's going to get 35 points, but I thought Horford was just fantastic on defense. Chris Middleton, I thought, was the Bucks' best player in tonight's game. He was really phenomenal, but I think Horford was definitely the best player on the floor.
Yeah, look, Middleton had an amazing game, including that three. Which
that was wild. That's fucking that was insane.
I have no idea how he caught and shot that in half a second,
and drained it, and didn't even hit the rim.
just totally pure. Couldn't believe it. And I was like, I was like celebrating. I was like, there's no possible way. And they were saying, like, he was clapping. He's like, give me the ball. I'm like, yeah, just give him the ball. It doesn't matter. He's not going to hit this. And he drilled it.
Should Jaylen Brown have been up in his face? That I've seen a little talk about that on Twitter about. Yeah, that dude made an amazing shot, but Jaylen could have been like, it felt like Jaylen was watching Giannis instead of following
maybe
Middleton around.
Maybe, you know, if this had gone a little bit differently, maybe that would have been a bigger
topic. We would have been furious at Jaylen for that if the Celtics didn't win.
But considering that it didn't work out that way, then yeah, maybe he should have. But look, you also in that situation don't know if he's going to like lunge forward and try and get a foul. You really have to be very careful. Like what happened there with Middleton is like you kind of
have to
hope live
that
with
the
it.
Guy doesn't hit an amazing 35-foot shot.
Like you can't criticize, because what happens is with half a second left, players end up trying to do crazy things like to get the the three free throws or maybe an and one or whatever. So if you get up in his airspace too close and he like flails and the referees fall for it somehow, then the question is, what the hell were you doing so close to a guy with half a second on the clock? Like, if he drills that shot, he drills that shot. You're up three. You're not going to lose. So, you know, you go into overtime, you take your chances, and you hope what happened today happens. So I'm not going to get on Jaylen Brown for that at all. But back to Al Horford, because I thought, aside from the end of the third quarter where he was clearly obviously gassed, he was just phenomenal throughout the entire game. Again, him in the post was awesome. The defense, the transition defense, that one challenge that he, I think, was it a block? That Giannis had the ball, full head of steam. Al Horford hung with him, met him at the rim, like for three quarters of court, and then challenged the shot. I think he might have gotten a finger on it. It was an amazing defensive play. Just an awesome all-around game for Horford. I'm interested to see what happens now with the Bucks. How do they counter that? Because right away, I think the Celtics on Tuesday night, you go to Al Horford in the post and see, you kind of probe, you kind of see what's going to happen. Are they going to overreact? Are they going to collapse on him and try to get the ball out of his hands? And if they do, then what happens? What do the Celtics run to counter the Bucks' overreaction, which could be a lot of backdoor stuff? I think if the Bucks get too focused on Al Horford, you're going to see Al Horford in a situation where he's finding guys like Jaylen cutting backdoor. You're going to see some backdoor plays that get the Celtics some easy buckets.
Yeah, I can see that. Or they could try to throw John Henson at him. I feel like John Henson might be a more stout post defender to Al Horford, but you're right. It's going to be very interesting to see how the Bucks defend him, because the Bucks don't really have any other guys who are that big or that size. Like Jabari Parker, when he was out there, he's basically their backup four and the kind of guy you'd expect to get minutes at that kind of bigger swing position. He was terrible on defense. The Celtics were just targeting him whenever he was on the floor. And so how the Bucks respond lineup wise, I think is fascinating, because we saw Giannis, I guess when Henson was on the floor or when Zeller on the floor, the Celtics did a really good job of like forming a wall and making basically Giannis either pick up his dribble or pass it away. Like, they weren't going to let Giannis beat them. But then when Giannis was at the five, he could really get to the rim. That's when the Bucks were scoring a lot of points in the fourth quarter. And that's the thing about the fourth quarter, that it turned out that the Celtics won and actually, or didn't win. They ended up going to overtime, obviously, but they won the game eventually. But in that fourth quarter, they were up 10 with 4 minutes to go and then really choked it away. And that was with Giannis on the at the five. This Bucks offense was playing at its best. At that point, though, the Celtics can counter with just posting Al Horford. So the lineup matchups going into game two. And this is why I love the playoffs, though, because the storylines and everything is just so much more fascinating with the coaches being able to make adjustments. It's going to be great just to see how Waylon Smithers, that's the coach of the Milwaukee Bucks, right? I sat down at the post-game press conference and he like sat down to start his press conference. I was like, my God, that's Waylon Smithers.
Yeah. He seems like somebody let the HR guy come in and take over the team.
And he's just going to explain to you that the new policies that you got for your health care, and it's going to be very boring.
Right.
Oh, my
right.
God. But the lineup matchups is something that he mentioned in the postgame, too. So I'm looking forward to game two already. I love playoff basketball.
It's going to be fascinating. The Celtics, I think, with Horford. And it's going to be interesting because there's like the move, the counter move, and the counter to the counter move. Then what happens? Like the Celtics, I think today, even with Horford on 8 shots, scoring 24 points, 12 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 blocks, 2 steals. That's his overall numbers. But 8 shots for Horford, 14 free throws. I still think the Celtics didn't do a great job of finding Al Horford as much as they could have. He could
the
have
Celtics,
had more opportunities.
Their half court offense is pretty bad. That was like much of the reason for the struggles of when they were like couldn't score, is just a lot of dumb turnovers, especially in that second quarter and then that stretch in the fourth quarter. And you're right. I feel like they should in that half court set be playing more through Horford than they are. You mentioned 8 shots, but it doesn't feel like they're going to him in the high post as much as you would think. Maybe I guess he still does a lot of facilitation with dribble handoff, but You're right. They still could do better job running the offense through Horford, because right now, whatever they're in their half court offense isn't that great. They're just not a very good like the offense is much better when they can play in transition or they're making steals, and then like that's where their athletes take over. They're not like not the best offensive team right now.
The Celtics did a ton of Rozier, Horford dribble handoffs, and then Rozier would turn the corner, and this is where they missed. And we'll talk about Rozier in a minute. He had an awesome game and an amazing overtime. But the one criticism I have of Rozier is that he does not see the floor very well. And I've had people, I tweeted it out and people responded that he's just so focused on getting the bucket that he's not really looking at the floor. So there might be some of that, and it's not necessarily a total negative. But there are times where you'd run a dribble handoff with Horford, and then Horford would pop out and he was wide open. And just those are opportunities that you can't miss a lot of, because when Horford gets it wide open at the top, he's either going to shoot the three and have a very high chance of making it, or because he has a very high chance of making the three, draws so much overreaction by the defense that's going to open up other things. So that's when the ball movement comes into play. So I think one thing in game two that the Celtics will have to do better in game one, so you can avoid that second quarter where the Celtics were outscored 30-15 and shot, 20% and had five turnovers that led to $9 points. To avoid that kind of stuff, I think they're going to have to find Horford at places where he's going to stretch the defense at the top of the key on pick and rolls and dribble handoffs, and then let Horford pass, and then you can start breaking down their half-court defense. But only when you do that, because if you're just kind of mucking it up in the middle and trying to dribble too much and drive and kick doesn't work necessarily with this. You have to find other ways to get the ball into the paint, get those paint touches, and get that defense into rotation. Drive and kick, what ends up happening is the length of Milwaukee just ends up deflecting so many balls that's when all of those steals happen. They get out to transition and things can cascade out of control quickly. So that's the one thing I would be looking for to avoid that type of collapse happening again.
Yeah, that's the thing about this Milwaukee defense is they are so long and they kind of play, played kind of conservatively in the fact that they weren't flying out or hedging like hard on pick and rolls and like creating those 4-on-3 situations for the Celtics. Like they were just kind of dropping back, playing pretty conservative defense, and their length is like a lot of the Celtics can't beat their guy off the dribble immediately, especially with the kind of the length the Bucks have. And so it led to, you're right, the drive and kick situations where you're just driving into length, and a lot of just passes that across the entire offense, or like when you're falling out of bounds. Those were the dumb, like the worst Celtics turnovers, then those immediately to baskets for the Bucks, because they're basically their bread and butter. But you're right. I think they have to do a better job of getting paint touches, and they always talk about getting the ball side to side. I still don't think they did a great job of that tonight. It really felt like the stretches of good offense were when they were creating a lot of turnovers, or when just like some crazy stuff. Like they had some good fortune in terms of offensive rebounding. I guess it's not all good fortune. You have to create your own offensive rebounding. But the Bucks are not a good defensive rebounding team, and the Celtics did a lot of at least it felt like lucky bounces to them. But Horford got his own rebound sometimes. I know Mook did it a couple times. And they were able to just like get that extra shot up. But other than that, I didn't think they're off like them running plays or their offense was that great tonight. But then at the same time, guys like Mook and Terry Rozier at the end of the game and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, they ended up having big nights. So I don't know.
Hey, I want to remind everybody that there is a Locked On Bucks podcast out there that I would highly recommend subscribing to, listening to it during the playoffs. You should listen to us, obviously, which you're doing right now if you're hearing me say these words. And then you should also go check out the Locked On Bucks, because that will give you a different perspective. We watch it from a Celtics perspective. It's going to be really interesting, and I'm listening to Locked On Bucks every day during this playoff series, because I want to hear their takes on what they saw and what their adjustments are going to make. So if you want to know what the Bucks might do and what the Celtics might do to counter, listen to the Lockdown Bucks podcast, because they will give you that perspective and you get a very good, deep understanding of what might happen next in this series. So it's definitely worth checking out the Lockdown Bucks podcast. Jason Tatum, since let's move on from Al Horford.
Star child.
We could do like an hour on each of these guys. So we got to try to get it all in a reasonable amount of time today. But Jason Tatum.
Sideburns. Oh, man, he was great.
Oh, man. I just, for a second, can I just take the analyst kind of, and just for a second, just say, man, I fucking love that kid. Just love that kid. He's so goddamn good. That reaching right hand layup around Giannis at the end of the, like, I don't even know, how did he do that?
He's long. He's the longest man ever. Longer than Giannis.
It's so, it's like Battle of Slendermen. It's just ridiculous. Tatum, in his playoff debut, only had 19 points, 10 rebounds. The third Celtics rookie to have a double-double in his first playoff game. The other two are Tommy Heinsohn and Bill Russell. So
good group to be a part of.
Good company. So 19 points, 10 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, 1 block. He did have 5 turnovers, but just an awesome, awesome, awesome game. And the reason why you want to talk about Tatum now, after talking about how shitty the Celtics half-court offense was, is he bailed them out. I don't know how many times. By just
start of the fourth quarter, it was all Jason Tatum.
Oh, man, just dribbling, creating. The Celtics offense in the half court has been very not good. And Tatum has found ways to just create stuff out of that muck and get himself easy shots. That one shot, I just loved it. Malcolm Brogdon was guarding him, and it was like the high post, and he up faked and spun, and like he was going to, it looked like he was setting himself up for a fadeaway jumper. And Brogdon, with his hand up, his right hand up, kind of advanced out to challenge the shot. And Tatum just ducked under the arm, kept his pivot foot, and had like a little floater.
He duped me. I was duped. I thought he was going up for it. Whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
He's going like, under. It was awesome.
That was fantastic. Just absolutely amazing. And then even when he had that turnover in the overtime,
a horrendous turnover. Back,
terrible turnover. But he hustled back and got the block. I think Jason Tatum's defense is almost as notable as his offense. And I only say almost because his offense was just so damn good.
He also had that amazing like one-handed pass to Juice underneath it. That was awesome. That's the best pass I've seen Jason Tatum
throw.
That was
orgasmic. I can't talk about this kid with any reasonable sense, because the stuff that he was doing on the floor was not rookie type stuff. That was, you know, fourth year guy type stuff. Like he's
not afraid of the moment whatsoever, which is awesome.
Not at all.
He dunked early and was just like, yes, I'm here. I'm Jason Tatum. I belong.
Right.
It was dope.
That finish that he had Giannis chasing, getting ready for the chase down block. He just quickly just rose up and said, nope, I'm dunking this shit. And it was just, what can you say? What can you say about that? I mean, it's just awesome. Huh.
We good? We good? Breathe. Let's take a breath.
I need a cigarette now.
All right. I think we should transition to talking about ISO Mook.
Let's talk about ISO Mook, please.
Amazing. He was like he had some crazy ass plays. He had the and one at the end of the first quarter, made three. Some just crazy made shots at the end of the shot clock. He got his own rebound. He was great. It was classic Mook. He got in like a little bit of a scrum, I guess there. I don't remember the exact movement, but he was like during a jump ball. He was aggressive. He's a little bit of the crazy guy you need in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I thought he was perfect tonight.
Oh, he was. He totally was.
And he was a very good defender. I thought there were some times where he got switched on to Giannis. I thought Mook played very solid defensively. And given the Celtics offense where it is, you just need him to take the shots he's going to take, and hopefully they go in, because you need those points at this point. So yeah. I thought he was very good tonight. I'm a huge fan.
He hit some bullshit.
Of course, that's part of the game.
Total mook bullshit shots in the mid range, but what was it? Was it the third quarter where shot clock was winding down and he got the ball. It was like a long two, but it was.
Well, yeah, they had a crazy run where it was he hit a corner three, then it was point. Al Horford found Jaylen for I think a two. Then that was the crazy possession where he like basically took all 24 seconds and eventually just got to the rim. And then Jaylen Brown hit a three. They scored 10 points in like a minute and 20 seconds in the third quarter. And yeah. The ISO, I have it in my notes that it's the ISO mookiest possession of all time.
Yeah, absolutely. It totally was. He had a couple of stretches at the end of the game where he had some defensive lapses, I thought.
What was that on him for the Brogdon three to tie it up?
I think it was because
I looked like they were playing a zone to in like to just for the inbound, and then they didn't know how to transition out of that zone to man to man, and someone, both him and Terry, went running, so I didn't know who was in the wrong, but Brogdon was wide open.
I feel like two things went wrong there. I feel like Morris didn't do what he was supposed to do, because Horford, I forget who he was defending, but Horford went with one guy. Morris went with the same guy. I think
it was Giannis.
Yeah, and then when Giannis came around the corner, then I think Rozier reacted and left Brogdon alone. But in that situation, that was a down three. You're better off just if you kind of like jab. Stay with the three-point shooter. Even if Giannis goes in and dunks, that situation was you'd still have to inbound. They foul you. You make your free throws, and it's still over. But you had – so it started with Morris, and then Terry overreacted, and then that left Brogdon open. And then there was another one that ended up in a Giannis dunk that I think Morris kind of misread a switch or whatever. So, but I think generally speaking, individually, I think Morris did a very good job defensively. And like you said, some of the shots that he hit were just clutch shots. Huge for him.
Next man up, I think, is Tito Three Sticks himself. We just mentioned him that is his goof up on defense, but I feel like I can't even remember. He's already come up a bunch of times, but what he did to Eric Bledsoe was just mean. That was a cruel, cruel moment, and I thought that was going to be the defining moment of the game. But that dribble step back just to freeze Eric Bledsoe and to nail it was huge. That is like the classic Tito Three Sticks moment. It feels like this is such a cliche, but he's like he's a clutch player, or shows up like the moment matters to him in terms of his personality, because he didn't have a great scoring totals basically for the first three quarters. He wasn't great on offense. You mentioned kind of his struggles in pick and roll with Horford earlier, or on the dribble handoffs. But he showed up, and that what he did to Eric Bledsoe was just...
That was mean. It was mean.
I said mean things about Eric Bledsoe and Chris Middleton in the preview pod, and I'm going to say I was wrong about the things I said about Chris Middleton. He's a fine player. But I stand by my Eric Bledsoe slander, because what Terry Rozier did to him was disrespectful, and then he just continued his great play in the overtime is a big reason why they were able to pull ahead.
Yeah, Rozier, he does respond. He is not afraid of the shot. He is not afraid of the moment, which has sometimes maybe not been great for him, but in the overtime, he was amazing. Let me pull up the overtime numbers. He was he scored 8 points. He hit six free throws, or five of six free throws. He hit that three. Just an awesome performance. I mean, he was the guy in overtime. Scored more than every other Celtic combined. Tatum, Horford, and Brown each hit a basket. So, or actually, Horford had free throws. So, an awesome finish for Terry Rozier. And I wrote about this yesterday or Saturday. That this is Terry Rozier's moment. This is his now third year. He is the guy. He is there's really no great option to back him up. So maybe they're going to get Marcus Smart back at some point later on in the series. Which
he was out there shooting before the game. He looked good to me.
They did say that he could probably be back by game 7 if it goes 7, and hopefully, possibly earlier. So we'll see about that. But that's it for Rozier. Like, Rozier is your starting point guard, and he's going to have to play a ton of minutes because they don't have a ton of great options. Like, Rozier played 40 over 40 minutes because Shane Larkin in the second quarter.
Shane Larkin had a terrible first couple minutes in this game.
He had a bad second quarter. Now, he did redeem himself later on, and it's good for, you know, him. And look, the Celtics, they're going to need him to play at some point anyway, but he still, you know, you can't count on him for a ton. Like, in a game like this, he still only played 16 minutes. Like, him, Monroe, Ogele,
Moose was a ghost out there tonight. We had Ghost Moose.
And it sucks because I really think that Monroe could be a guy that helps in this series, but he barely got any touches. I mean, it's just whatever. But back to Rozier. I just think that this moment for Rozier is a early career-defining moment. To play in these playoffs, how he plays in these playoffs can really change the course of his career moving forward. If the Celtics see him as a guy that could hang around for a while, then that does make other decisions personnel-wise interesting at the very least, and I'm not going to get into that in this podcast, but having another option, a good player that's under contract for another year that, you know, who knows how it goes. Hey, he has a tremendous amount of value either on this team or as a trade chip or something. Somehow, Rozier is handling this moment so far very well. And I think moving forward, it's on him. If he does not play well, things probably will not go well for the Celtics. They need Rozier to be at least decent. And on a night like this, he had 23 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal. Just overall pretty good night for Rozier. They're going to need that type of production from him this whole series.
Absolutely. Like, they're going to need points from everyone this whole series, because if you look at I don't know where else they should expect to get points from on this roster. They basically got 20 points from the ending five. I guess Tatum finished with 19, but Horford, Jaylen Brown, we haven't really talked about tonight, also finished with 20. Morris had 20, and Tito had 23. But you expecting Shane Larkin or Semi Ojeleye to score more points for you? Moose gave you 1 point, but I don't know where else this Celtics team is going to get scoring from. So basically, they need a similar type performance in each of the next games, because I just don't know where more points are coming from unless, like, Jaylen Brown goes for 10 more. Let's talk about Jaylen, because I thought he struggled early, but he just was kind of very good. I feel like he's just pretty consistent and will be there and make the right shot. He's the guy who, like, benefits the most from just back cuts. He was the guy getting the easy baskets at the rim like that. I think he's just a very solid offensive player, even though he didn't have the greatest shooting night. He was 9 for 19.
I think, well, look, Jaylen is, I thought, was tremendous. He was really, really good defensively. I think there were a couple of times where he showed a very much improved handle, where he got drives that he got himself free with an exceptional amount of dribbling that is generally has not been very good news for the Celtics when he's had that much dribbling. But tonight he showed that his handle is much improved, and he can get himself to the rim. And I thought early on him getting to the rim was really important. But then, of course, like, the court awareness to get open for that pass from Tatum that we talked about, and going out there and defending. He really, early in that first quarter, when the Celtics were just really flying around and played one of their best quarters of the season, Jaylen Brown was in the midst of that. He was in the midst of that, defending, tipping it away, getting out on the break. It was just really, really – I thought he had a pretty good game.
Concur. I agree.
All right. I would like to remind everybody also to subscribe. If you're not a subscriber to the Locked On NBA podcast, I am one of the co-hosts on Wednesdays. So I will be doing Locked On NBA post Celtics. So we'll have the Locked On Celtics podcast on Wednesday, obviously. And I will be on Locked On NBA talking about the Celtics on a national scale. And we have, like I said, the show has gone daily. So you've got a bunch of the Locked On Network hosts hosting shows together. So I'm on with Jake Madison from the Locked On Pelicans podcast. And so I would like you to subscribe to the Locked On NBA podcast, just like you subscribe to Locked On Celtics, because it's a great way to get caught up on everything. All right, let's go to the Twitter. Let's go to the Twitter and get some of these old tweets in with the Rain and Jays hashtag, and start with @LiveGreenOrDie. That game was a perfect example of why the NBA is going to be the most popular sport to watch in the coming future. Look, obviously,
time is a concept and a social construct, but I agree that the NBA is going to be the most popular sport in the coming future.
Yeah, I think so. I think baseball has just got serious problems, can be a little bit boring. And
the NFL, they're just like murdering each other on the field. There's a real ethical, moral dilemma to watching that sport.
I really agree. Like, when the key to the game is which guy suffered the life-threatening injury, and Gronk goes and gets fucking blasted in the head and gets his egg scrambled, and it's like, oh, well, that's a key play. No, I mean, he's gonna have CTE later in life. Like, that's, I don't like that at all. So, but that's my personal opinion. But
the NBA is dope. Like, I watched basketball for 9 hours straight yesterday, and all of it was compelling and fantastic.
It was awesome. It was awesome. So yeah, I'm obviously we're a little bit biased, but yeah, I agree. @PassIRRR, will you please take your time murdering the average Al morons on the pod after this game? Please. I mean, if that's what the crowd wants, then look, I will say this. And there's other comments about Horford. @RinaldoOreo82, certainly wasn't average Al today. @MerlinCano, Al Horford made a big difference in this game. So there are, obviously, Horford is one of the, I guess, more polarizing players on this team, basically the people who watch. What my favorite part about this whole thing is that in a year where Al Horford was an all-star, is amongst the people being considered for all defense and all NBA teams, that we have spent all of this time trying to arguing, and I am very guilty of it, arguing with idiots over how good Al Horford is. He is having now. Yeah, he had a lull after the All-Star break, and it would have been nice to see him do some other things like later in the season. But I mean, maybe when you look at how well he played today against a really good player, maybe he was just coasting. Maybe he's a guy in his early 30s and he understands like the end of this regular season doesn't mean a whole lot. So I'm not going to go crazy. He's going to coast a little bit and pick it up come playoff time. And if you're going to have a guy, if you're going to pick a time when you're going to play, when you're going to, you know, go crazy, this is the time, right? Not when you're already locked into the second seed and it doesn't really matter. So I don't know. I just
the thing that's the most frustrating about the whole average Al thing is that Lou Maloney, the main perpetrator of such nonsense. It's like now he's moved the goalposts of the argument. He's like, well, when Al Horford does play well, he goes, well, yeah, this is exactly the type of Al Horford I want. It's just like, well, he's now you're just changing the argument. But before, you've literally called him average Al, which is an insult to his entire Like, he's been the best defensive player on the best defensive team. He's going to be probably, all NBA team or first team defense. I don't know about first team, but second team defense. I think he could be named to the all NBA third team. He's just amazing player. And just for the fact that you even nickname him Average Al is ridiculous. For you just like move the goalposts completely on the argument. It doesn't like pardon your initial stupidity.
Yeah, no, exactly. When he finally, you're like, oh, he finally stepped. Like, no, Al Horford has been fantastic for the Celtics, super important for the Celtics. I don't want to waste a ton of time having to.
We've already yelled about this too much.
Too much. It's just
this is the playoffs. We should be happy. We should be uniting, right, not dividing.
Right. Exactly. So let's get back to the hashtag. If only there was a Bucks Twitter, they'd be so heated right now.
I've been trying to find a Bucks Twitter. There's not a lot of people out there.
No.
And I've been saying some nonsense things about Chris Middleton. And like, I got a few ironic retweets of that today from Bucks Twitter, but they're not saying anything to me. They're very polite, those people from Milwaukee.
Well,
they're not trying to start anything. And I guess I respect it, but I don't know.
I don't know why anybody like would expect Bucks fans to be salty or anything. Like, they've had a disappointing season. Like, look at this roster that they have. They should be better. Like, they have Giannis Antetokounmpo, who is an MVP candidate. Okay? An MVP candidate. Middleton is a really good player. Snell, Bledsoe, Brogdon, Parker.
They're all solid. Parker's the biggest thing, because Parker was a number, two pick?
Yeah.
After Wiggins. He should be a lot better.
That's
what Bucks Twitter, what I have found on Bucks Twitter is that they hate Jabari Parker.
Yeah.
And they are really down on him playing whatsoever. And I kind of think they need Jabari Parker if they want to go to those lineups with Giannis at the five, because really Jabari Parker is the only kind of four that fits in next to Giannis at the five. So they kind of need Jabari Parker, but that's what Bucks Twitter is talking about right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's no reason for Bucks Twitter to be up in arms or anything like that, because they're disappointed in their team. When I listen to the Lockdown Bucks podcast or listen to these guys talk, most of it is, look at this roster. We should be better than this. Like, they should be looking at the Celtics in that second seed, as decimated as they are, and say, yes, this is the opportunity to get. And on top of, they shouldn't even be playing the Celtics. They should probably be in that 4-5 series with the Cavs, who, by the way, got blown out by the Pacers today. But side note. So I don't know. When I look at, I see no reason in trying to provoke Bucks Twitter, because they're having their own tough time. I don't want to. I feel bad about piling on. Like, we shouldn't pile on to Bucks Twitter. Like, they're one of those teams
We shouldn't go looking for a fight.
Yeah.
It should be like karate and only respond in self-defense.
Exactly. Let's leave the Bucks fans alone. They're having a hard enough time with this season as it is. They're staring down the barrel of Antetokounmpo, kind of like starting to question his existence in Milwaukee. They're lucky that he is who he is, and I think that he is at a point now where he's still very much dedicated to Milwaukee, but it's not going to be long if this keeps going. If they screw up this coaching search, it's not going to be long before people, you know, get in his ear and be like, hey, you know, there are other cities, other teams. So,
but why haven't they just surrounded him with shooting? Like, they could have gotten Marco Bellinelli or Ilyasova. It feels so obvious, but Giannis at the five doesn't seem like a thing they've tried yet. And it's like, this is playoff basketball. Of course, like, that would be like the most logical thing. He's 7 feet tall.
Right. I don't know. Use him like, you know, they use Al Horford. But yeah, you know, he's not that kind of a passer. But So again, let's just leave the Bucks fans alone. That's my take.
That's fair.
Okay.
Reasonable.
that's me. Yeah, I'm trying to be fair and reasonable. Let's head to the rain and junk hashtag. And then before we get to Jam's junk drawer, and at by Fraxter, the layup missed an OT by Rozier just completed the full Tito experience.
I don't remember the specific layup, but yeah, that sounds about right.
Drove right down. And the funny thing is that I'll disagree slightly, because usually the full Tito experience involves him getting really stupid fancy with the layup and missing. This was a drive right down the center of the lane, and he just laid it up softly over the front of the rim. And I don't know if he just put too much spin, the ball kind of squirted out of the rim. But they ended up getting the ball back, but it was like surprising. Like Tito was like, he put his hands on his on his knees. He was like, "What the fuck?" Like you could see it. He's like, "That was bullshit." So, and let's see. That's the only random junk hashtag we got from this game. So I guess it's junk drawer time.
All right. Junk drawer, gotta say, way too many Aaron Baines shots in the first quarter.
Yeah,
I think there's about two of them, but it's just like this. We've come time to the playoffs. We don't need to settle the end of the shot clock for an Aaron Baines, like 12 footer, because Aaron Baines was taking them somewhat early in the shot clock. And I appreciate Aaron Baines and what he does on defense, but I just can't live with those Baines shots.
No, I agree. That was like there were a couple times I was like, "What, Aaron? What are you doing, man?"
But they went away from that. Moving on to, this is mostly for people who are in the stadium, but for who watch the Kid Picasso segment, where they have to guess what the player the kid drew, is fantastic, and they just keep on doing new ones. And I just gotta say, it's a great segment. I highly recommend.
Do they post those online somewhere?
No, I haven't seen them, but they definitely should. I'll talk to some people and. Get all the Kid Picasso online. That'd be great. gotta say, Semi had some bullshit calls go against him, specifically against Giannis, and I was upset because I thought Semi played some pretty solid defense on Giannis in his short time there. I think he's going to be a more important member of the bench, although I don't know. They need so much ball handling that it feels like Larkin is going to be important, but... they're going to need some sort of bench production. I thought Semi got jobbed on some tonight, and that doesn't sit well with me.
Yeah, he did. I think he did. There was a block charge that
was horrendous.
I think he kind of got screwed. Considering all of the contact that was being allowed up until that point, there was so much being allowed that to have that little thing be the call against Semi was like very perplexing.
Yeah, Brad, and the thing about it is Brad was furious too, and I like seeing Mad Brad. So it was a good combination of Semi-Injustice and Mad Brad. So it definitely made the junk drawer. Following that, I just wanted to point out they were playing DeBarge, the song Rhythm of the Night, during a second quarter timeout. I thought it was a great choice. The Utah Jazz, SB Nation page, their Twitter page, SLCS Dunk, was just tweeting constantly like mad things about Brad Stevens, and was like trying to make fun of Brad Stevens the entire game, just because they're still upset about Gordon Hayward. And it was it was hilarious. I recommend everyone checking it out, just how mad online this guy was.
Yeah. I saw some of those retweeted onto my timeline. It very randomly salty, but hey, whatever. That's fine.
Hey, it's good stuff. Then the game got like real intense and serious, and I started taking notes on the actual game. So I lost my junk drawer.
Yeah, that is quite all right. That's fine.
Oh, I've already mentioned that I don't even remember his name, but the Bucks coach is Waylon Smithers, right?
Yes, you mentioned that Prunty is Waylon Smithers.
Okay, and we're good then.
We're good. All right. So solid podcast. Solid win for the Celtics. Tuesday night's going to be a very different game. We'll see what adjustments are made. Again, it'll be interesting to see how they react to Al Horford, because I think that's going to be the key. Al Horford basically got Giannis into trouble and fouled him out, even though it took all the way into the overtime. It still ended that game, and it's very important. So we'll see what adjustments are made there and what the Celtics do to avoid a second quarter like they did. So I hope that you are going to subscribe if you're not a subscriber, and tune in to every single Locked On Celtics podcast. Search for us wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Locked On Celtics. We're everywhere, including Spotify, and you can tell your smart home device like Google, the Home or the Alexa or whatever, just ask that thing, whatever you ask it, until to play the Locked On Celtics podcast, and it'll do that. If you are a subscriber, then go give us a 5-star rating and give us a good review, because that is a big, big help. It helps us rise in the rankings. We're still trying to get to the top of those rankings, and that helps us, gets us more visible, gets more advertisers involved. It gets us money. So that's kind of a way to pay us, even though we give it to you for free. So that's it. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network.